Are you someone who tries to drive while distracted by your phone? Someone who props it on the steering wheel or peeks down at it for a glance? Or just scrolls and scrolls? If so, you could be the next person to get into a fender bender, get a ticket, veer off the road, or even cause a crash that kills you or someone else. Enough already. Put the phone away or pay. Paid for by NHTSA.
This is the Rich Eisen Show.
Here's the other surprising part.
With guest host Kirk Morrison.
Buckle up. He's going to put on a show.
Live from the Rich Eisen Show studio in Los Angeles.
I've been watching you guys since day one. You guys are getting better and better.
Activating. No.
The Rich Eisen Show. Earlier on the show, women's basketball writer for The Athletic, Sabrina Merchant. Coming up, senior writer for The Athletic, Nicole Auerbach. Co-founder of the Premier Lacrosse League, Paul Rabel. And now, filling in for Rich, it's Kirk Morrison.
All right, hour number two here on the Rich Eisen Show. April Fool's Day, or just April 1st, 2024. Monday, filling in for Rich. I am Kirk Morrison, and so excited to be with you because we got a lot to talk about as we prepare for a huge night of women's college basketball. They've got the center stage when it comes to basketball. They're taking over the headlines. They're taking over all of television tonight. And someone who will be in Albany at the game joins us now. She's Nicole Auerbach, the Athletic senior writer. Nicole, so excited for you to join the show. What is the atmosphere like in Albany? We're talking Albany, New York is like the center of the basketball world tonight at 7 p.m. Eastern time. What's the temperature down there?
Well, it has been gearing up for this. I mean, like the whole time, ever since the bracket dropped, people were hoping that we'd get this Elite Eight matchup with Iowa and LSU. And I've got to tell you, there's a ton of Iowa fans here. They travel anywhere and all over the country. LSU's got a bunch of loud fans as well. Should be an awesome environment. We've had pretty much sellout crowds for every session. But certainly Iowa will be here. They'll be loud and they'll be angry. I mean, they're the ones that came out on the losing end last year. But this is the matchup that we were hoping we would get to see. I wasn't sure we'd get there because both those teams had some shaky moments in the first weekend, but it's going to be awesome. And I mean, it really needs no introduction. We all learned a lot about these teams, their stars, the trash talk, everything a year ago. And here it is for another trip to a Final Four.
No, that's what you said it right there, Nicole. We learned about this, I guess, rivalry last year because we saw it play out on the national championship game. And I think that when you talk about college basketball, one of the biggest rivalries always, Duke, North Carolina, that's probably the one that we know because there's a sort of a bad blood, the hated rivalry because they're so close to each other in proximity. But because it's LSU, because it's Iowa and how things went down in the national championship, we've kind of waited all season long for hopefully the rematch. Now, we thought it would maybe be in the Final Four, even a national championship game again. But this is it true bad blood between the two? Like, what kind of game do you expect between two teams that finished up last year in a national championship game?
Well, I'm with you in that I wish that this game were later on and that this was a Final Four type game. But you can't really, control the bracket necessarily. I think both of these teams still think that there's a lot at stake and that they are excited for the fact that they will have to go through each other if they're going to win a national championship this season. I don't think there's actual bad blood. And these players were asked about that. Angel Reese said, no, she does not hate Caitlin Clark. But when she is on the court and she's got competitors on the other side, she is going to talk trash. And then she's going to be friends with these players when they're off the court. And so I think there's just a lot of mutual respect between the stars in this game. They've spent a lot of time around and against each other over the course of their careers. I think that these fan bases have been gearing up a year for this potential rematch, and they don't like each other. But what's going to be really interesting is what's different from last year. Obviously, these are different rosters, different strengths and weaknesses, but it's really, to me, going to come down to how this game is officiated in the paint, because that's where Angel Reese does her work. That's where LSU has the advantage, and it's going to be really interesting because I think that's where the game will be won or lost.
Interesting you say that, Nicole, because I want to shift gears just a little bit. You mentioned the paint. A guy who's been dominating the paint in the men's game. He's now everyone's, I guess, new favorite basketball player. I know he's mine for sure. But even Nikola Jokic of the Denver Nuggets late to a podium because he was watching DJ Burns of North Carolina State. This is what I love about not just a transfer portal, but also about March Madness. It's stories like DJ Burns, who's really taken over America over the last couple weekends with obviously his size, but charisma, his smile, just the way that he has so much fun. I love that they're in the Final Four and that he's now sort of the guy I'm looking at to hopefully go out and continue some more success for North Carolina State.
He is exactly why we love March Madness, because we entered the men's tournament saying, hey, they don't really have the same star power that the women do, these household names. And then you get a DJ Burns that breaks out and we get to know him over the course of multiple weeks. And I think it really helped NC State that they had to go out and win 5 games in 5 days in the ACC tournament. I'm sure they would have preferred not to do that and to comfortably make the field another way. But it gave all of us a chance to get to know this team and fall for them and DJ Burns in the lead up to the actual NCAA tournament. I mean, we saw those crowds. We've heard those crowds, the way they cheer when he gets the ball, because you don't always see teams playing with this style, playing through a big man like that. And then, as you mentioned, the charisma, the dancing, the joy that you see out of him during these games. How do you not love this guy? I mean, I was thinking about this last night. I think he is not going to ever have to buy another drink in the state of North Carolina. But don't we think he's made so many fans so many other places that like he could go to Chicago where I live, people buy him a drink. I mean, he's just such a delight, and he is exactly what we love about this tournament.
Yeah, and I think also you said it best too. He's got everyone's eyeballs right now to a point where if he puts his name in the NFL draft, he could possibly be drafted at the end of this month. Some team is like, that athleticism, that charisma, we can use him somewhere, tight end, outside, defensive line, something. He's showing off that kind of athleticism right now. I mean, honestly, Nicole, that's where players like that, you start to say, wow, I didn't know. I was not familiar with his game, but kind of, and you follow college sports, and obviously the transfer portal is always topic of discussion, or NIL, and yet we always talk about some of the things that go wrong. I feel like this is one of those that goes right. This is why there is a transfer portal for a guy who goes to Winthrop, says, I want to take my game to another level, to the highest level of college basketball. He does that and actually is successful and now has turned what a guy who nobody knew to now a fan favorite.
Yeah, exactly. And I do think we dwell a lot on the negatives. I do think there's less of a stigma around actually transferring than there used to be even 8 years ago. But this is why it exists. This is why, you know, players make moves. It's like when, you know, professionals in their job, you know, you get promoted and you get a new job. And there is that upward movement. There's also downward movement when a guy's maybe sitting on the bench at a Power 5 program and he wants to go down a level and play more at a mid-major. But, you know, it is part of this. You find a place where you work, you fit the system, you develop, you have the right coaches, the right teammates, and you can just capture some of this magic. It's awesome to see. And I agree that we should be highlighting this. A lot of teams these days are led by transfers. They're remade by transfers. It's part of the game these days. But I do think we need to stop just vilifying anyone who does it and seeing how that they can actually find the place that they were meant to be, surrounded by the right pieces around them. And again, I don't think anyone predicted that NC State would be in this position in the Final Four, but there are lots of things we can take away from it, because you also had a coach who was maybe like on the hottest of hot seats, and you have a little patience. The team is playing hard for him. It's magic in a bottle for sure, but I do think that there's certain parts about this team and this run that really resonate in this particular era of college sports, where it's so much about instant gratification and instant success. And this team defies a lot of that with the way that they've been built and this run in particular.
She's the athletic senior writer, Nicole Auerbach. You can follow her on X on Twitter at Nicole Auerbach. Look, Nicole, this past weekend, I had to kind of wipe my eyes a little bit. I didn't necessarily hear the see the television, but I did hear it. And someone said Alabama Clemson for the right to go to the Final Four. And I'm like, oh, the expansion of the college football playoff is already here. And yet it was a basketball game. And then to hear that Alabama, their first time in the Final Four, this storied program and franchise, if you want to call it, we always talk about the football. But the basketball program is in the Final Four. Just your thoughts on where Alabama's going and that fan base now having something else to cheer about outside of the Crimson Tide football.
Well, apparently all they needed was for Nick Saban to retire, because right. Now immediately they become a basketball school and they get to their first Final Four. But, you know, this is something that they have been building towards. The Nate Oates hire was outside of the box at the time. I mean, yeah. He was very successful at Buffalo, but you know, again, that was someone who didn't have ties to Alabama or like the SEC and that type of footprint. But he's really been able to build this program into what he wants it to be from a talent perspective as a recruiter, but also by development. It's just interesting that this was the team that broke through, because this wasn't the team that we all were talking about it as potentially being a team that would get this far. Last year's team had a lot more attention around it. And when you're talking about potential lottery picks, there was just more buzz.
Right.
So it's interesting that it took this team, this particular path through the bracket to get there. But it's certainly not a surprise, because this has been a team that has been building towards this, a program that has invested in men's basketball in this way since Nate Oates got there, and has been a problem in the SEC, which a lot of people felt was one of the deepest and best leagues in the country this year. So not terribly surprising, but it is kind of funny that it happens right after Nick Saban retires.
It's unreal, right? The Alabama fans, we lose Nick Saban. But guess what? We got basketball now. So now they're going to the Final Four. And can't see Roll Tide heading into Phoenix. That's going to be interesting, that fan base going and talking about that. But when it comes to UConn men's basketball, obviously Dan Hurley's taken over, and it's now the UConn of old, it seems like. They're just dominant. They're dominating every single team that they go up against, Nicole, but it's also to a point where they don't have those signature names, those star players. They're just a basketball team. I'll be honest, I can't name two or three players right now, but yet when I watch them, they all play a brand of basketball that works, a brand of basketball that no matter what, everybody seems to be involved. And at the end of the day, you're looking at UConn and not the individual players. I feel like that type of basketball is not celebrated enough, because everybody's looking out for me, the NIL deals. How is Coach Hurley getting it done at UConn?
Yeah, I think the way that you described it as like a full-on team, and the way that you watch them, like the ball movement, the right. way that a lot of different players are involved, they are really aesthetically pleasing team to watch because of that, because they do have a lot of players involved. I do think Donovan Klingon has probably emerged as the face of this particular team, especially the way that he has been blocking shots in the NCAA tournament. And I just don't know what you do if you're an opponent trying to prepare to go up against that, because it's just impossible to replicate. But what I keep thinking about is, you know, I saw that team up close in Brooklyn the first weekend, and Dan Hurley kept talking about wanting to make sure that this team is bulletproof. And what he means by that is that they could have an off day shooting from the perimeter, or one player could maybe not have a good day, or foul trouble, whatever it is, but that they could survive it. And that has shown, because they've had these moments. I mean, I covered a game when they were playing Northwestern, they shot 13% from three and they still won comfortably. They still had those stretches in the second weekend as well, where they weren't shooting the ball that well, but the defense is so, so good. It's so elite. They can block shots. They're so aggressive. They got a three-headed monster in terms of scoring on most nights. And so they are bulletproof. And then it just makes it look so easy for this team, because even their weaknesses are covered up and addressed by other parts of their game. So it's really hard for me to imagine that anyone's going to be able to beat this UConn team. And Dan Hurley is so hard on them, despite the fact that they win so many games by double figures. And I think that's exactly the mentality you have to have when you're trying to repeat. Things are going well. You are winning games handily. If he's nitpicking you, you are going to continue to get better and keep winning.
Yeah, you keep winning, and then you find a way to just create dynasties. And that's what they're trying to create. Very similar to what UConn basketball was in the early 2000s, late 90s, and then even the women's basketball team have an opportunity to join North Carolina State as having both the men's and the women's teams in the Final Four. At Nicole Auerbach on X on Twitter, Nicole Auerbach, the Athletic senior writer, just a couple more minutes with you here, because I get so much information just from following you, and the information that sort of, I guess, kind of made me laugh over the weekend is that when you think about just college basketball, right, we always focus on the players. But then you have some of these coaches, and then you have some of the coaches, but then you also have some of the players. And I'm thinking about the program in Purdue because it kind of, you brought it up to my attention, is that Purdue, good and bad. Good thing, they made it to the Final Four. They kind of got it over the hump. They've been one of these top seeds for so many years. But yet the bad thing is that they still could be bounced in the Final Four by a double-digit seed. It's like the good versus the bad. They have an opportunity to lose again to a double-digit seed where they shouldn't. How do we view Purdue? Is it winner or it's not a success? How do we view this Purdue basketball team?
No, this is absolutely a success already. Matt Painter was in that club that coaches hate to be in, which is like the best coach never to coach in a Final Four. And he got through to that. This team, a year after losing to a 16 seed as a number one seed, they come back and they get to a Final Four. Program gets there for the first time in over 40 years. It's all a success. They won it this way. People wondered if you could play through Zach Eady, play through bigs like that and actually win in this type of tournament. And they did. They did all of those things. It is just kind of hilarious that, of course, their draw in the Final Four is a double-digit seed in NC State. Obviously, they're a power conference team. This is a very talented team. We've learned a lot about them in the last couple of weeks, but they did sneak in as an 11 seed, and that's the joke. But this is so different from those early exits that we've seen from those Purdue teams in recent years that kind of got them that moniker that they would always be a 1, 2, or a 3 or a 4 seed, and they wouldn't get out of the first weekend because, again, the style of play or something, they would face a hot team, hot mid-major, whatever it might be. And then they finally get through it and they have to go through a team in Tennessee and a coach in Rick Barnes who has a lot of that too. He had been to a Final Four, but he'd also taken teams that had really good seeds in the NCAA tournament and underachieved. And so that accomplishment cannot be taken away from Matt Painter. It cannot be taken away from this Purdue team and Zach Eady. And you could tell in the post game with how fired up Zach Eady was that this meant a lot to him. It meant a lot to a lot of people. I was talking with Robbie Hummel, who was fortunate enough to be there and called the game. He did a fantastic job as an analyst. And he was telling me he was so surprised at how emotional he felt. He felt like he was in the game because there's just so many people who've seen Purdue fall short and have a lot of talent. And he'd been on those teams. He'd had injuries. And you also just have a lot of people in the coaching community that love Matt Painter and want to see this for him. And so it is already a success. The rest is gravy. But we did see a team that lost to a 16 go on and win it all in Virginia a couple of years ago. So yeah. Purdue is definitely going to try to keep that as a perfect 2-for-2 with that weird but potentially awesome historical note.
Look, last question for you, Nicole, is because you – go across the country. You are at some of the biggest events in college sports, NFL, I mean, professional sports as well. But you've covered, obviously, college football and some of the biggest matchups and the biggest games, and obviously college basketball as well. Where does tonight's game sort of rank in terms of LSU and Iowa? Where does that rank for you in some of the many games that you've covered throughout their journalism career?
Yeah, I mean, it's way up there. Trying to figure this out yesterday. Is this the most anticipated day of women's basketball history?
Yeah,
I mean, I agree. I didn't cover some of those, the Tennessee, UConn, and some of those Notre Dame, South Carolina. Like, there have been some big games. But in terms of the actual anticipation and the lead up to it, the fact that people are wondering, you know, could this break the viewership record that was set at the championship game last year, even though it's on ESPN? Like, the fact that we're asking those questions, it's pretty remarkable, and it shows just a different level of anticipation. And it's not just LSU-Iowa, which I think adds to it because you still have Paige Beckers and Juju Watkins in the nightcap. And you have all of these stars that obviously draw us into the women's game, but also it's the present and the future because Juju and Paige are going to be the faces of the sport next year. You have the history of UConn, but then they've kind of fallen off as parity has increased across the sport. So you have a lot of different storylines coming to a head. And then, of course, Caitlin Clark has set so many different viewership and attendance records. So you add all of that, plus they were the team that lost. They're the team that's trying to avenge that loss. You just couldn't write a script that is any bigger than this. So I think it's the most anticipated women's basketball game or day in the sports history. I understand people would argue with that. People might even say last year's championship game was actually the most anticipated. But I can't wait. And I just feel just incredibly honored to get to be courtside for this and to get to watch it regardless of how it goes. You just know that you're watching a sport take a giant leap forward. And I felt that last year at the Final Four. But now I feel that again tonight, because it just feels like we've all been prepared for this for a year for the rematch. And so it's going to be incredibly special. I think it's going to be the most watched non-Final Four game, and I'll be really curious to see how many people tune in, because we've been waiting for this. Everyone's been ready. We know all the storylines. We're ready for it for a whole year now.
Well, you are our boots on the ground. I will be following all of the movement, following you on X, on Twitter, at Nicole Auerbach. I can't wait to kind of see this from your lens as well, one of the biggest games that in women's college basketball history. I can't wait for it tonight. I appreciate the time, Nicole. Have fun tonight. We'll be watching.
Thanks for having me.
I appreciate it. That was Nicole Auerbach, the Athletic senior writer, covers college football, does a great job on college football, and also following women's college basketball and also men's college basketball, just college sports in general. But it's one of those days where, like right now, it's, what, 1:20 p.m. Eastern time. The game doesn't kick off, I'm going to sort of tip off until 7 p.m.
Five and a half more hours.
We got five and a half, and I'm just like, man, I want to see this.
Let's fast forward the day a little bit.
But yeah. I can only imagine what these women are kind of going through.
Well, no. You don't have to imagine.
What you mean?
You've been in a situation.
What's
you tell
the
us
biggest what's game it? You've ever played?
Well, yeah, that's what I'm saying. Before that, like, you tell us what's it like when you
No, see, this is different, man, because so much, like, I can't, and this is a good, you know, conversation to have, because the games are so much bigger now than they were 5, 10, 15, 20 years ago. We didn't have a lot of the social media, the buildup. We didn't have a lot of this. So you had big games and everybody watched, but now with so many different ways and vantage points of seeing it, okay, through streaming, through live, through people in sort of their Twitter accounts, and just there's totally different, because everybody has a voice now. Everyone has a camera. Everyone, there's a different lens. There's a different buildup. The family sees it. Your players see it. My biggest game I think I played in probably just, you know, regular season games. You know, I never made the playoffs in the NFL, but it was kind of the kickoff games that I've played in. Okay. You know, like maybe my first game was probably one of the biggest I ever played in, was that, you know, here I am as a rookie, 2005, drafted to the then Oakland Raiders, playing against the New England Patriots coming off of a Super Bowl, right?
So, and, yeah, you must have been feeling.
So, you almost to a point where you're kind of let down in other games, because there's so much hype. There's so much fanfare. Mm-hmm. That's why when you go to some of the regular games, it's just like, oh, this is nothing. But you get to these big games, those primetime games, especially this is one going to the Final Four. This is totally different. You win, you advance. To like my buddy, who's a college basketball coach, he says, you win, you advance. You lose, we're on a charter back home that same night. You don't get to sleep in. Like, it's you on a charter right back home. And you're sitting in there in your office thinking about what just happened. It's real. It's real. So, yeah, we get to more of that. And then also, it's my first time. I haven't done this yet. I'm kind of excited to do it, because I'm usually here on Tuesdays or Wednesdays, Thursdays, Friday. I haven't been here for Overreaction Monday. I have not been here.
Wow.
And it's usually better during football season.
Yeah.
But here
true.
We are.
We got some
Monday.
Topics.
April 1st, 2024, and there's some overreactions on Monday. And I can't wait to take part. Brockman will run me through that. We'll do that coming up next, right here on The Rich Eisen Show with Kirk Morrison filling in for Rich.
Let's talk O'Reilly Auto Parts, people, or as you might know from their jingle, O'Reilly Auto Parts. They're in the business of keeping your car on the road. O'Reilly Auto Parts offers friendly, helpful service and the parts knowledge you need for all your maintenance and repairs. Because you know when you need your car fixed, you need somebody who knows what they're talking about and is helpful, has a smile on their face, and gets you back on the road. They've got thousands of parts and accessories in stock, either in-store or online, so you never have to worry if you're in a jam. The team at O'Reilly Auto Parts can test your battery for free in or out of your car. If it needs to be replaced, they'll help you just find the right battery for your vehicle. Need your windshield wipers replaced, a brake light fix, or a quick service? They'll help you find the right part or point you to the nearest local repair shop for help. Whether you're a car aficionado or an auto novice, you will find the employees at O'Reilly Auto Parts knowledgeable, helpful, and the best of all, friendly. Stop by O'Reilly Auto Parts today or visit us at OReillyAuto.com/Eisen. That's OReillyAuto.com/Eisen. Every day when we're on the road, people around us endanger themselves and others by using their phones while driving. They think they're hiding it, but we've all seen them and know exactly who they are. For instance, there is the sneak-a-peeker who darts their eyes between the road and their texts. There's also the got-a-ticketer looking upset because they just got a ticket for using their phone while driving. And what about the fast-scroller who can't drive 5 minutes without updating their social feeds? Or the nightlighter, who has that mysterious glow illuminating the inside of their car after dark. Do any of these sound familiar? If they remind you of yourself or someone you know, rethink your behavior before you find yourself becoming the fender benderer, the veering off the roader, or worst of all, the driver who killed someone. Put the phone away or pay. Paid for by NHTSA. What is it like where you're back there? You know you're going to get it.
Yeah.
The 8 in the box or 9 in the box that you see knows you're going to get it.
Yeah.
And you know you're going to give it to them.
Yeah.
And they know you're going to give it to them. What is that like for you?
I just love the game. I love having the ball in my hands and I love making plays. And I don't know. It's just the game, man. Like that feeling when everybody knows and they can't stop it, it's an indescribable feeling, man. And that's just speaking for like us as a team. And you know, I just love the game.
Yeah, I know you're smiling. You're just smiling as you're saying this. It is just, it must be an amazing feeling.
Yeah, a lot of fun
to have that ability. Derrick Henry here on the Rich Eisen Show. Did you hear what Earl Thomas said before the divisional playoff game in Baltimore, saying that the Patriots didn't want to tackle you, but they were going to have a different
approach? Oh, yeah, I've seen it everywhere. Everybody was sending it to me. Everybody was showing it to me. Yeah, I've seen it everywhere.
Okay, so now, later on, you're in Baltimore. You get the ball. You're on the edge. Did you know that was Earl Thomas that was coming for you?
Definitely knew that was Earl Thomas.
Did you give him a second shove because it was Earl Thomas?
Yes.
I was wondering. Because you gave him one in the front, and you gave him one slightly unnecessary one in the back.
But what's so funny about that is I was so focused on giving him another shove that I ran myself out of bounds. So the first time, he kind of turned around.
Yeah.
And I could have turned up Bill, but I was so focused on this, like, giving him a shove that I ran myself out of bounds. But yeah, I definitely did that because of that.
So then the last question is, was it worth it to run yourself out of bounds?
I think it was, yeah.
Welcome back into the Rich Eisen Show Radio Network. I'm sitting at the Rich Eisen Show desk, furnished by Grainger with supplies and solutions for every industry. Grainger has the right product for you. Call, click Grainger.com or just stop by. Next segment in a little bit, about 15 minutes, will be my 2 minutes of baseball. My recap of the opening week of baseball.
120 seconds. Come on, more than 2 minutes. It was great.
Like I said, 2 minutes of baseball coming up. If it was Brockman's 2 minutes, you're more than welcome to expand a little bit, Brockman.
Because that's our 500, baby. We're back.
Starting the West Coast trip early this year Red Sox.
Sweep the A's, sweep the Angels, and suddenly we're going to be in first place.
It'll be more people here in the Rich Eisen studios than at the Red Sox and A's game. How about that?
No doubt about it. Did you see the attendance for the A's game yesterday?
Come on, man.
It was like 3,500.
I'm born and raised in Oakland, California. That's a sore subject for us people, especially the community. You know about the community in the East Bay.
Yeah, they're just up there.
It is just a small community, a small group. To see the Giants, San Francisco Giants, they own the entire Bay Area except for the East Bay. That is the East Bay's team. And yet, a lot of people are comparing the UFL attendance, which we can get into. The UFL had its opening weekend kickoff. We saw some things that we'll get to maybe in the next hour of the show. Saw a couple of 64-yard field goals, one that was not legal, one that was legal. I'll get into more of that. But you know what? I'm ready. I'm ready. You're ready? I'm ready to overreact. All right. Overreaction Here, Monday. Take it away, Brock.
Let's go!
That was terrible.
That was crap. That was garbage. This place sucks.
Overreaction
Mondays.
Monday.
Okay. All right, pro days are over.
Yes, yes. Let's go.
3.5 weeks from the draft, so not a lot of NFL in today's overreaction.
Smoke season.
We're in kind of a little dead period. Yeah. Lion season now for a couple weeks. Mm. But
you say lion season?
Lion.
Lion.
Something?
L-Y-I-N.
Yeah.
Can you ask us how we're doing? Is that...
Hey, everybody. How's everybody doing?
You guys good? Yeah, I'm good, but I like how you said it's the smoke screen season. I like how you said the lying season. I like that.
I know. People, look, I'm sorry. I get so excited. Kirk's here. He's never done this before.
I am.
I got so excited. I almost forgot to ask you guys how you're doing. Good. I know the YouTube people, man, they get so mad when I don't.
You can't forget me.
Fella, you good?
Hey, I'm good.
You all right? Everybody good? Everybody good? All right, Kirk. Kirk?
Yes, sir.
Not one? But two teams are going to trade up and draft a QB in the top 10 in the NFL draft.
Oh, that...
Now, look, Kurt, I say something, and you say, overreaction, explain why. No. Reasonable reaction, explain why. That's the rules.
That is a reasonable reaction.
Ooh.
I think reasonable. I'm not going to overreact, but I think it's a reasonable reaction because we've seen a couple of teams try to make a couple moves, right? More so the Minnesota Vikings that made that trade to get around. Now they have two first-round picks.
Yep.
And I think, look, there are some other teams who are in that – what is it, the 8 through 12 range. And so picks 8, Atlanta, Chicago, New York, the Vikings I just mentioned at 11, Denver Broncos, and in Las Vegas Raiders.
So 13, right?
The Raiders at 13. So 8 through 13, they're the teams I'm looking at more so, 11, 12, 13, will just jump up a couple spots. I think it's a reasonable reaction because
the,
they're...
Even the Giants at 6, maybe they move up a little bit.
I'm just telling you,
they
man.
They can move up to 3.
I think we're looking at the quarterbacks and the success that C.J. Stroud had. I think some of these teams are a couple players away. The NFL is so different because before you would say, man, we've got to build this thing up. We're a couple years away from competing. What C.J. Stroud and D'Amico Ryans and the Houston Texans did, that team was awful the year before. Awful. And we thought that there's no way that the Texans would be what they were. They were a playoff team. They won a division. They won a playoff game. Teams are saying, you know what? If we build around it, we should be able to do that. I would not be surprised. That's why I think it's a reasonable reaction.
Okay. Nice. All right. Let's move on. Let's talk about UFL is back.
Yeah.
When I say Michigan,
I can't wait, baby.
When I say Michigan Panthers, what do you think of? I think of Jake Bates. 64-yarder to win yesterday. Not even the longest field goal in Ford Field's history, though.
Yeah.
Of course, that belongs to Justin Tucker, who set the NFL record a few years ago. But an NFL team needs to sign Jake Bates immediately after his 64-yard UFL debut.
You know what? So this is not a I don't know. Is it an overreaction or a reasonable reaction? I'm trying to figure out. I would go overreaction. A team doesn't need to sign him, but man, he's on some team's radar. Because is he going to be the next Brandon Aubrey for the Dallas
That's
Cowboys? Could he be? But let's think about the story of Jake Bates. He did not kick field goals. He hasn't kicked a field goal since high school. This is something totally different. This was his first time, kicking in a game and kicked a 64-yarder. This is huge, man. I'm excited because I got a UFL game coming up this weekend.
Panthers?
No, San Antonio Brahmas.
Okay.
I got the Brahmas versus the Memphis Showboats. Wade Phillip versus John DeFilippo. So I'm excited about what the UFL has presented. But this 64-yard field goal, remember, he kicked two of them, though. He kicked two field goals. The first one, he actually kicked after the timeout was called by the St. Louis Battlehawks. So they tried to ice him. They tried to ice him, and it was like, oh, he made it. Like, he made the. So it was like, oh, after he did that, it was pretty easy. Like, just do the same thing, the same repetition.
Do that thing again. Yeah. That you just did.
And I think because maybe this is his first time kind of doing this, and it's just like, hey, man, what the heck? I don't care. Just go out and kick it where usually some other guys, now we've seen some kickers who were just scared in the NFL. Like, you just knew. Like, their whole demeanor, there was too much swagger to Jack Bates this weekend. Too much swagger.
Jack Bates, great name. Too.
Yes.
Let's go. Get him in the NFL.
Jake Bates. I'll say Jake.
So cool, too.
Jake Bates.
Jack, Jake, whatever.
Jake Bates.
All right, let's talk a little NBA. Dallas is on fire, guys. Behind Luka and Kyrie.
Okay.
The Mavs are going to the Western Conference Finals.
Oh, no. That's an overreaction. Stop it. Don't do that.
Going to the Western Conference Finals.
No.
Hot.
It's hot.
They are hot.
They are still in the play-in. Like, they are they seventh or they did go to sixth?
Fifth.
Oh, they jumped
the
to fifth. Oh my God,
is real,
it is real. They're, oh, you know what? I did see fifth. Malik Monk out for the Kings,
the
4 to 6 weeks. I did see
TJ,
that. See,
be honest, you know the Clippers are falling. Mavericks are going to be five. Yeah. Mavericks are going to be four by the time playoffs hit.
No way, Clippers are staying at four.
Come on, and we know Luka owns the Clippers, so
yeah, Luka individually scores a lot, but when it comes to the wins and losses, the Clippers win. Luka put up 50 a game.
Yeah. Mavs, West Finals.
This is an overreaction. Like, look, we love Luka. And Luka is putting up some MVP-type numbers and leading his team and getting them higher up in the rankings, or in the standings, I should say. But we all know it comes down to the playoffs, and that team did not look good last year in the playoffs. And you have Kyrie Irving and Luka. Who is going to be the guy this time that says, well, Kyrie fall back and just say, you know what, this is Luka. Luka still, he's the guy now. Or will it be in reverse? That's what it was last year. Can it be different this year? I'm going to overreact and say the finals? No, I can't put them in the Western Conference Finals. I think they're a second round exit. They're a good team. But put them in the Western Conference Final? I mean, obviously Denver is going to be there. And you're telling me outside of Denver, are they better than Minnesota? Are they better than...
Ooh, I trust them more than Minnesota. Ooh. Yeah, come on now.
Man, Anthony Edwards is ready to take some people's hearts, man.
Yeah, like, but with the Big Cat not being in the game, Carl Anthony
Towns, it don't matter, Anthony.
It kind of matters for the T-Wolves. Yeah, so I don't know if they're
I'm just saying,
Towns.
Man. I don't know. There's something about that dynamic that they... I'm overreacting. I can't put them in the finals, Western Conference Finals.
All right, TJ, this one's for you. There's no point in Embiid coming back this year. Like, what are we talking about? I saw a report that his return is imminent.
Mm-hmm.
For what? So they can lose in the play-in game?
Well, if Joel Embiid's playing, they're not losing the play-in game.
I don't know that.
You do know.
You know that?
But come on, bro.
Played in months.
That's fine. The man was MVP of the league until somebody landed on his leg and ended his season.
Get out of the way.
Well, he was on the ground, so I don't know how he got away when he's already laying down. You know, Chris, that's a good question because I've thought about this. It's like, is it worth him coming back?
Yeah. What's the point?
I don't know, but I know if he does come back, he gets at least a week or two to get in shape. We're not losing the playing game with Joel Embiid. So
I know you're playing the Heat. right now. You're defending
playoff Jimmy.
Hates me to say, you're defending Eastern Conference champions.
Yeah, we got a little problem with those Heat boys.
Yeah. Especially we already know Hemi Butler.
Yeah, and Jimmy, you know how he feels.
Hemi Butler
he
in the playoffs.
Be a Sixer, you know.
Tobias Harris? Really?
Over me?
Tobias Harris over me?
But look, man, if the big dog's in there, I like our chances to win at least the play-in. I don't know about a full series. But yeah, let's bring him back. Let's see what happens. Let's roll with it. He was, like I said, the dude was the MVP of the league until he went down, Kirk. And
Well, let's blame the NBA for saying he's got to play 65 games. You know what I mean? Like, he should have been on a minutes restriction, but because we're all about the reward.
Played 30 games this year?
Not 30 games, but, you know, I would definitely have him limit his minutes, probably limit a couple of games here because the NBA season is already too long, and you're seeing a guy like Embiid needs rest. Right, there's other players.
17 games is enough rest.
No, I'm saying, like, throughout the season, though, there should be a better plan for him because there's more wear and tear on a guy that size. You know what I mean? Like, we ain't talking about Anthony Edwards, right? We ain't talking about Shai Gilgeous, Alex. Those dudes can play 65 to 70 games. That's just what they do. But Joel Embiid going up and down the court that many, you want him to be available for the playoffs. And he probably won't be available for the playoffs. Everybody's body is built differently. Like Shaq, same thing. Shaq definitely needed just, hey, get him ready for the playoffs. But you're going to play him in the marquee games. You're going to play him the majority of the season. But that 65 threshold is probably what's going to hurt Joel Embiid.
All right, Kirk, we're going to talk a little baseball. And you're going to do 2 minutes after this next segment. But this pains me. Bronx Bombers 4-0. Juan Soto gonna win AL MVP and Yankees back in the World Series.
That is not an overreaction. That's a reasonable reaction. I won't say the Juan Soto part, because all you got to do is just hit 30 home runs as a Yankee. You're already in the MVP conversation. Like, let's just be honest.
He's got that short porch. Yeah. He should hit 45. Yeah. Right?
Hey, look, you know,
he's a 1 year rental.
He's a 1 year rental, but he's also in New York, who are just glamoring for new stars, new guys. And Juan Soto is not a new star, but he's now your star in New York. So I see him, yes, as being a big time MVP candidate. Now, the Yankees going to the World Series, I don't know. It always seems to. Are they better than the Orioles this year? We'll talk about that. Ooh, who are the division champion, reigning division champions of the AL East? But it's good to see that, you know, had a good weekend, the Yankees. I don't know about World Series just yet.
It always seems early MVP favorite in the AL.
You know
for
who
the
didn't have a good weekend?
Meet the Mets.
Might as well cancel baseball as far as I'm
concerned. Cancel the
three games
season,
and just cancel the season.
Mets. Man, there, you guys are so bad. Sorry, TJ. All right, a couple college hoops now. Let's do it. DJ Byrne, Zach Edey, big man matchup. Mm. We all deserve. Let's go.
Is that it? What's the question, though?
What's the question? We all deserve?
I just made a statement.
Is it?
don't we deserve
I agree with you, yes.
Well, it's not an overreaction.
No, it's not an overreaction.
You know how to play the game.
It's not an overreaction.
No, it's a reasonable reaction. I think because this may be the last time that we see it, because the big men, they don't play that style of basketball outside of college. Like, putting Edie in a pick and roll with Jokic, like, that's nasty work. Like,
Edie versus Wemby next year?
Come on, man. Wemby going right by that dude, man. Like,
is he?
I mean, this the NBA is about perimeter shooting. It's about stretching the floor. We don't see these types of players work in the NBA anymore. This isn't the 80s and 90s where you had, or early 2000s where you had somebody. I saw a meme the other day. And it was like a tent that was put up, and it was in the middle of the key, and it had Edie on it, because that's what he just camps out in the middle of the paint. So that everybody's talking about he doesn't get the 3 second call, right? I mean, 3 seconds in the key.
Oh, right. He's just standing there.
He's just standing there for like 10 seconds on the shot clock. Everybody's like, three seconds.
Yeah, I saw people complaining.
Complaining about that. In the NBA, are you allowed to do that? No, because guys are going to spread you out. The guy who you can't slump back, that's called illegal defense. You got to be on your guy. So, yes, that's no illegal defense in college. So it's a reasonable reaction, because we're going to see something that you won't see in the NBA. So let's sit back and enjoy it. Two guys in the middle of the paint going at it. Because after it's over, you won't see it. Not in the NBA.
I guess, man, I obviously heard this dude's name, but I was just unfamiliar about how actually dominant he was. He's averaging 30-16 in the postseason in the NCAA tournament now. Yeah, 25-12 on the year. 62% shooting.
He's 7'4", though, man.
Like, he's Canadian. He's super nice.
He's 7'4". We don't give guys who are 7'4 credit, right? I think, look, Wemby is doing it at all. Like, Wemby is... I know the Spurs are not a good basketball team, but we're watching Victor Wembanyama each and every day put up points. He's filling a stat sheet, triple-doubles almost.
These guys better get their MVPs now. Wemby's about to win like eight in a row.
He is just... I mean, he's fun to watch. They got to get a better team around him. That's the one thing.
That'll come.
He is
Or he's going to demand a trade to the Knicks.
One of the best players that we've seen in a very, very long time. But for to be that height, his game is totally different than Zach Edey's,
he's
right?
Like a 6'2 or DJ Burns. Guy trapped in a 7'4 body. True.
And they said his brother could be on the verge, too. Wembanyama.
Like 14 or 16?
Yeah, 6'8 already. Yeah.
So he already said he a freshman. He coming. He ready.
Chris, I saw, you and I, we look at Tankathon a lot for mock drafts. They have Edey getting drafted by the Spurs in the second round. So you can imagine.
Twin Towers?
Twin Towers.
You know, I love the big man era coming back.
What's that, like Duncan and Robinson again?
Yeah, let's do it.
Re-emerged?
That's it.
Overreaction Monday.
All right. Good job, Kirk.
Appreciate it. Thank you for having me.
Indoctrinated.
Yeah. All right. We'll get to some more of that. I got some fallout from that, by the way. And then also, too, 2 minutes of baseball. That's all I'm going to give you today.
Let's go.
That's coming up next here on the Rich Eisen Show. Kirk Morrison here filling in for Rich.
A lot of you folks who have been listening to this show know about our relationship with Game Time, which is the ticketing app that gives you complete peace of mind with your purchase because you could see views from your seat. And before you buy your tickets, before you hit that purchase button, you get all in pricing so you know everything that's into the cost of your seat. And there's no surprises at all. Now here's something you may not know about Game Time. It's the authorized ticket marketplace of Major League Baseball, which makes getting tickets even faster and easier. Prices on the Game Time app actually go down the closer it gets to the first pitch. Killer last minute deals, all in prices, views from your seats, and the lowest price guarantee with Game Time taking the guesswork out of buying MLB tickets. So download the Game Time app, create an account, and use my code EISEN for $20 off your first purchase. Restrictions apply. Visit GameTime.co for terms. Again, create an account, redeem the code EISEN. You get $20 off. Download the Game Time app today. Last minute tickets, lowest price guaranteed.
America starts the day with America in the Morning.
First of three pushes of storminess.
Hi, I'm John Trout, your host for the latest news, politics, entertainment, business, and weather.
A speech with political overtones.
Our staff of correspondents provide a fast-paced look at the world with specialized reports from where news happens.
The judge's decision was based on finding there is a likelihood.
So far, the central bank appears to be threading that.
Concise, accurate, and fresh each day.
America in the Morning, the podcast, available wherever you listen.
What was your baseball game like?
My baseball game was pretty good, but I didn't play in high school. I played like recreational league in Babe Ruth.
Okay.
And I used to pitch.
As well.
Pitch and hit. Yeah.
So what was your pitching game like?
The pitching game was pretty good. I mean, I didn't, you know, I was a heavy ball. I had no idea how fast I was throwing.
Huh.
But people used to say, man, you got a heavy ball.
So when we're watching you swing in Major League as Pedro Serrano,
yeah,
is that your swing?
That's my swing. Oh, and I don't know if we ever talked about this, but
okay.
Every ball I hit out, I hit out, except that not as far as they shot it out because they have to reverse the cameras.
Hold on a second, Dennis Haysbert. How many home runs did you hit?
I hit three in the movie, right? Mm-hmm. I think I hit three in the movie. I hit every one of them I hit out.
Okay. And all the batting practice you
oh yeah I used to hit oh yeah I used to hit routinely.
So were you the best hitter of all the actors in
I would
that
say
movie?
So I would say so Charlie and I were the only guys that could really play baseball. Wesley was really athletic,
okay,
and could run, but wasn't much of a hitter.
He couldn't hit, but could Charlie hit, or he was just
Charlie could hit and Charlie could pitch.
But you went yard more than anybody else in the cast of Major League.
Except for the baseball guys that were out there.
Actual. So who was the worst?
Oh, I can't. I won't say.
Yes, you can. You absolutely can. That microphone works. Corbin Burnson, could he?
Corbin was okay. I think Tom Berenger was like maybe the
worst. No kidding.
Yeah. I love you, Tom. You know, he forced it out of me, man.
Oh, back here on the Rich Eisen Show, Kirk Morrison here filling in for Rich. Got to get to my 2 minutes of baseball here because I'm a big baseball fan growing up. Baseball was actually my first love. I learned how to play baseball because I started off T-ball. You go from T-ball to the minors, and you go minors to the majors, and then 11, 12s, then you go to the 13s, and then you go to, what is it called? 14, 15s, right? I think it was, I was at 13 or 14. I remember going up against Dontrell Willis, one of my buddies, great buddies of mine, in a regional final. And he was so good in baseball. And I knew, like, baseball probably is not going to be for me. You know what I mean? Like, very early, you realize, okay, everybody's pretty much the same, I would say, you know, when you're in Little League. And then there's, like, think about how many kids play Little League. When does that separation actually come, do you think? Like, when you start to realize, like, yeah.
Usually there's one 12-year-old who's 6'1", and you're like,
jeez. Like, yeah, he's different.
He throws 70, and you're like, whoa. Yeah.
So I think, like, by age 13, you know if you're, like, for real, or you just, I'm just doing this for recreation. Like, 13, 14. I remember going up against Dontrell Willis. Did not. Bet never really got off my shoulder. So he walked me. Oh. The thing about it is he could have threw it right down the plate. I probably wouldn't going to hit it. But he was throwing some nasty splitters. And I mean, the dude has been nasty since D-train. We were young. The D-train. I'm throwing curveballs from off the top. I mean, if he would have just threw three fastballs right down the middle, I probably wouldn't have caught up to him. But no, baseball was my first love. I get to high school, play, 2 years in high school. And then, you know, I had the conversation with my head coach of football. Hey, son, I'm going to tell you this. Do you think you're going to make the major leagues? Because right now your batting average is this. You got to be on the football team. So you know what? Stuck to football. Obviously, the better decision for me. Went on and got a scholarship to play at San Diego State. Made it to the National Football League. And so now I sit here and I talk to you guys about baseball because I watch it as a fan casually. And now it's starting to couple players I get excited about. Obviously, Shohei in Los Angeles, so I get to kind of get to see him every night. But let me get to my 2 minutes of baseball because this is 2 minutes. Do I got a little a baseball bed? I got a baseball music that I can get in the back, Jay.
Oh, man.
You got a little baseball bed for me?
What we got?
What we got? Something. Yeah. Remember this week in organs? Baseball.
Baseball.
Here we go. This is all right. So, ooh, I like this. Here we go. So my 2 minutes of baseball kind of starts with this. California, Los Angeles, Anaheim Angels. Not sure what the name is right now. I'm just going to call them the Angels. We're already 1 weekend into the baseball season, and Ron Washington already called a player meeting or team meeting. Like, we the first weekend, and we already got a team meeting? Come on, man. Angels, no Ohtani. Mike Trout still on the team. Sorry, Mike Trout. But that's just want to let you know they already had a meeting. Like, that's when you know it's already going to be a problem. We still got 158 of these things to go. You got a meeting on the first weekend. A shout out to Ellie De La Cruz.
Love Ellie.
Man, love Ellie. Cincinnati Reds. I'm going to be watching because he's one of the exciting players in baseball. Shout out to him, though, in terms of learning a little bit of English. He did his interviews this past weekend in English and said, look, so cool. How y'all think? I'm like, this is so cool because he put the time in, he's putting the effort, and he doesn't have to do this. He can go out, but he was like, nah, I don't need no interpreter. I'm not doing the Ohtani, man. This is all me. So, man, shout out to him. Want to give him his flowers as well. You mentioned Juan Soto with the New York Yankees. Had a big, huge weekend. Obviously, the name is going to resonate because he's in New York. New York's winning. They're winning. And he's going to continue to win. So now you have all of these. The Bronx Bombers are back. Can we say that with Juan Soto? Get everybody back. I'm a go with that one. So
painful to say.
Painful
that,
to say that.
Painful, but they're 4-0 and they swept the Astros, man.
Yeah,
that's no joke to start the year.
Yes, they look good. Another thing that I had in my 2 minutes of baseball, and this is no bias here, but I had a chance to watch the Dodgers. All four games this weekend against the St. Louis Cardinals. If they don't win the World Series, it's just, come on, man. Like, I'm telling you today on April 1st, looking at the camera, April 1st, if the Dodgers do not win the World Series, this is an epic failure. Watching Mookie Betts, Shohei Ohtani, and then Freddie Freeman start off any inning or start off any game, come on, man. And in my last part of my 2 minutes of baseball, to my Oakland Athletics fans, I apologize. We deserve better. There's more people here than there are at the Oakland A's game. And I do apologize to you. Apologize, man. Oh, it's not good.
Not good.
That's not good. And I don't even know how it gets any better, though. That's the hard part.
I mean, like, opening day, there's more people in the parking lot because they're having a protest.
We're protesting, man. Yeah. Like, that's unfair.
Chit and sell the team.
Yeah, it's unfair, man. So that was my 2 minutes of baseball. Those are the stories that kind of stuck out to me. Obviously, there's going to be, you know, highlights throughout the season, but it's one of those situations where with, 157 more games, 158 more games. There's a lot of games left. There's going to be ups and downs. There's way too many games. I would love to see baseball shorten its season, make it more interesting, make games bigger. You know what I mean? Because that's what fuels the NFL.
What do you want to do? You want to lop it off to like 140, or do you want to do like 100?
I think 100 games is perfect. That extra 62, man, that's a lot of games.
100 isn't enough. 62 is too much.
Like 125?
It's just too long. Like
130.
There is no urgency when it comes to baseball. And then by the time the urgency happens, guess what? The NFL season is kicking off. College football season is kicking off.
What they should do is just lop off September, have September be the playoffs, and then the World Series finishes in early October like it used to.
I would even go into August.
Lop off 30 games.
So I would even say August would be playoffs.
Baseball's 14 months long. It's just too long.
Yeah, let them do August for playoffs.
6 months.
And in World Series. All right.
In how September? About
the September?
Let's go, Mets.
During the week. During the week, baseball. More Rich Eisen coming up next.
Every day when we're on the road, people around us endanger themselves and others by using their phones while driving. They think they're hiding it, but we've all seen them and know exactly who they are. For instance, there's the sneak-a-peeker, who darts their eyes between the road and their texts. There's also the got a ticketer, looking upset because they just got a ticket for using their phone while driving. And what about the fast scroller, who can't drive 5 minutes without updating their social feeds? Or the nightlighter, who has that mysterious glow illuminating the inside of their car after dark? Do any of these sound familiar? If they remind you of yourself or someone you know, rethink your behavior before you find yourself becoming the fender benderer, the veering off the roader, or worst of all, the driver who killed someone. Put the phone away or pay. Paid for by NHTSA.